We're meeting a third-party presidential candidate here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. President Trump and Democratic nominee Joe Biden step aside for a moment. There are nine other candidates who have qualified to appear on five or more presidential race ballots. That is Ballotpedia keeping score. There are five parties on the ballot here in Wisconsin. We have extended invitations to all of them. What do you want to know about the Constitution Party? What are your thoughts on third-party candidates? Do you vote for them? We're at 800-642-1234. Don Blankenship is running for president under the Constitution Party. He is former CEO of the coal company Massey Energy. In 2010, he was at the center of a deadly mine explosion that killed 29 men, and he spent a year in prison. He's on the ballot in 21 states, including Wisconsin. Don, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you, Kate. I appreciate you having me on.
Why are you running for president?
Well, I think I know more firsthand what's wrong in the country and what needs to be done to fix it than anyone else could possibly know, because I was, as I say, often born in a poorhouse and made it all the way to the dinner table at the White House, and then they put me in the big house. So I know a lot more than anyone else could possibly know about how flawed the system is.
When you say our system is flawed, things need to be fixed, can you be specific? What are you talking about?
Well, there I was referring to the criminal justice system. You know, it's obvious that the judges and the establishment, if you will, knows what it takes to have a fair trial. They have laws that they call Brady or Giglio or Jinx that require the government and the FBI to turn over evidence that they have against accused Americans. But when they don't, nothing happens. The judges are appointed for life, and therefore they don't care how they rule or don't have to worry about how they rule. But the problem is bigger than criminal justice. It's, you know, it's everywhere. It's the fact that we have so much corruption in government, the fact that we have made ourselves dependent on dictatorships like China, the fact that we waste so much money that we will never get out of debt. So there's so many problems that my experiences will help me solve that I think that I would make a great president.
So you're running as part of the Constitution Party. And for those of us who don't know about it, what does this party represent?
Well, the name itself pretty well tells the story. You know, the Constitution Party members believe that it was the Constitution that made America great to begin with, and that we have to return to the Constitution. The Constitution says, for example, that all men are created equal. It doesn't say that the government should advantage one group of people over another.
What about women?
Well, women are people, so they should have equal rights, but we shouldn't have laws that favor gender or race one over the other, because that's what causes inequality, not equality.
In 2018, you called yourself Trumpier than Trump. What was that about? Is that true?
Yes. When I say that, Trump believes that we should have tariffs on imports. I believe that we should have tariffs almost on all imports, and that we should rank countries as far as their environmental stewardship, as far as their treatment of human beings and so forth, and that we should put tariffs on countries that are not being good worldwide citizens rather than just when they begin to have nuclear proliferation, and that tariffs is the answer to the budget and also the answer to creating jobs in America. I believe that illegal immigration is illegal because it starts with the word illegal. So many of the policies that Trump advocates, I believe in. I'm a totally different personality and a lot more calm and I hope a lot more sensical than President Trump is, but actually he has policies that will help return America to being the country that it once was.
You mentioned immigration. What would be your approach to immigration policies? What would you change? Would you build a wall?
I think that whether you build a wall or use electronics or whatever, that you have to control your borders. Well, I think 9/11 proved that, and I think that the number of illegals that are in the country that are, you know, committing violent acts and so forth prove that. I think that any company or country that doesn't select the people that are joining the company or country is not going to be as good as it could otherwise be. But I don't believe that you can deport 7 million people, that you can deport dreamers who were children that were brought here, you know, through no effort on their own, and they have really no place to be deported to. So I'm sort of in the middle on some of those issues. I believe in solutions rather than arguments, and I think that there is a solution to the illegal immigration problem that would benefit the country, and the parties, the two major parties, all they do is argue about it. They don't intend to fix it.
How do you feel about family separations that are occurring, sending children back to their country of origin?
Well, I think family separations are ridiculous because family is what's key to, you know, to having quality life and to not turning to crime and drugs and all that sort of thing. And but I also believe that, you know, if we stop people from entering the country, it would be a tremendous benefit to the American worker. I also believe that the lower income earners, many members of the Democratic Party, have been misled in that because they're the ones that suffer the most from illegal immigration.
We're talking with former coal executive Don Blankenship, who is running for president under the U.S. Constitution Party. We're exploring third-party candidates, extending invitations to them here on The Morning Show. What do you want to ask Don Blankenship about his platform? Do you vote for third-party candidates? Join in with your questions, your background, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Don, a third-party candidate hasn't won the White House since the 18th century. Why bother running?
Actually been since the 19th century, but yes, it's 170 years we've elected either a Democrat or a Republican, so hopefully over the next few years we can begin to convince people that they're wasting their vote when they vote for one or the other, because basically all it is drama. I think people saw last night in the debate that neither of those two candidates are going to help America at the end of the day because they're combative and divisive, and they're more focused on themselves than they are the problems of the country. So at some point in time, Americans will turn to a third-party choice, and we have to be ready when they do.
What was your top-line takeaways from the debate last night?
Well, the lack of maturity. I think the Saturday Night Live will have to edit the debate very much to make it pretty funny. It's just ridiculous how they interrupt each other and won't allow one another to express their thoughts, and they don't have any substantive or some meaningful answers to the questions. I also didn't think Chris Wallace did a very good job because he prefaced a lot of his questions with alternative facts, and it was just a terrible debate.
Let's look at the pandemic. One of the big issues here is the fact that millions of people are getting sick, over 200,000 deaths still spreading. As president, how would you address the coronavirus pandemic?
Well, I think we can look back in the 1920s in America and see one of the things that should have been done. You have to quarantine people like we did in 1925 when we had 600,000 cases of tuberculosis. You know, the ideal that people that are asymptomatic spread or don't spread the virus is debatable, but the ideal that people with symptoms spread the virus is obvious. So if you have symptoms and of the virus, you should have been quarantined or should have quarantined yourself immediately. But, you know, we stopped Chinese and Europeans from coming into the country.
Would you take actions to close down businesses, close down the economy?
No, I think based on the best information that I've seen, is people over 55, over 60 years old that are actually susceptible to death for the most part. I would have favored something where we went to the extreme to protect nursing homes, to protect people with other conditions, to protect people plus 55 or plus 60. But to shut down the entire economy and so forth probably caused more deaths through suicide and other issues than it saved. So it was a bad choice both for the economy and for dealing with the virus.
So you're saying people committing suicide because they are jobless? Is that what you're connecting to there?
Yes, I think that's one of the reasons alcohol sales were out of sight. And, I haven't seen numbers that I can rely on, but it looks to me like we've actually had fewer deaths, you know, when you look at the entire picture, than we have in normal years. And as you know or may know, the Center for Disease Control came out and said that only 9,000 of the, at that time, 180,000 deaths were solely related to COVID-19, and that some huge percentage were plus 60, and some huge percentage had as many as six or seven other ailments already. And so the virus itself wasn't responsible for nearly as many deaths.
Do you believe in the work of the CDC, the scientists of the CDC? Would you support this agency as president?
I think I support the CDC. I think having a Center for Disease Control is fundamental, but I don't know that I agree with everything they say or do, and it would depend on specific questions. But we need a Center for Disease Control, but we also need facts. I mean, it's clear that the facts about COVID-19 or what has been represented to the public as facts are not facts.
What in particular are not facts?
Well, first of all, you can fundamentally believe that when you incentivize hospitals and others to classify a death as a COVID-19 death and you pay them to do that, that you're going to get more reported COVID-19 deaths and cases than there actually are. But more importantly, the CDC itself says that, as I said, only about 9,000 of 180,000 or so had died solely of COVID-19. And even there, a high percentage of them were in nursing homes and elderly. So the failure to properly measure the virus and what was actually going on led to bad policy, like was it Cuomo in New York that moved people from hospitals to nursing homes, where the nursing homes didn't even have the same protections that the hospital had. So that type of nonsensical behavior is what caused a lot of the deaths.
Don Blankenship, running for president as part of the Constitution Party. We'll be back with him in a minute. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Constitution Party presidential candidate Don Blankenship. We're exploring his platform and the role of third-party candidates. 34 days before the presidential election. There are five parties on the ballot in Wisconsin, and we've extended invitations to all of them. In Wisconsin, the Constitution Party got just north of 12,000 votes in 2016, 0.4% of the vote for president. Let's take a call now. Dave is joining us from Green Bay. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning. I would like to ask, I'm going to jump back to something that your guest just spoke about, tariffs. Tariffs are effectively a tax on the people that put the tariff on. So originally, historically, America paid most of its government bills by charging tariffs, and that was effectively a tax on the American people. Do you understand that purpose when you are in favor of tariffs, sir?
Yes, I understand that the tariff shows up in the cost of the product. But I also understand that when you make the product, you get to tax it several steps along the way. You know, the commodity that's mined, whether it's iron or coal or whatever or some other mineral, you get to tax that. You tax the wages when people are turning that into a product, and that creates jobs. So basically, I believe in what George Washington believed in, which was that we should have tariffs on products that make the cost of that product equal to the cost of making it in the United States. And the reason that's important is it prevents you from being dependent on a dictatorship like China and having 96% of your medicines coming from China and being subject to viruses and so forth in other forms and food and so forth moving into the country. So you're going to have to raise revenue for the government somehow, and you're better to do it on tariffs than you are on other taxes.
I want to get back to the pandemic for a moment, and by extension, America's healthcare system. We have seen racial disparities in the problems of care in our system for healthcare. How would you specifically approach these issues, these disparities, and how America receives healthcare?
Well, I think the disparities are, you know, they're not so much a result of race, although race is perhaps you would argue a factor in poverty and in the living conditions. but I think it's not surprising that people of the white race or whatever might have lesser susceptibility to the virus because they're more socially distanced in many cases. They're not living in government housing or in small houses with multiple family members and so forth as much, so they don't have as much susceptibility to the virus. I think that essentially we need to look at things in terms of people's conditions rather than as to what race they're in, and I think you would find the numbers to be even more compelling that the poor have suffered more than the rich.
The Black Lives Matter movement, the protests you have seen all over the country after George Floyd was killed by a police officer in Minneapolis, Black Americans are killed by police at more than twice the rate of white Americans. How would you address this issue as president?
Well, again, I think Black Americans in the communities that they live in have not been, if you will, as affluent and as law-abiding. So I do think that it's a natural result of it. You know, the shootings.
You can make that generalization.
Well, they're a symptom of the problems rather than the problems per se, because many times the cops do encounter very difficult situations in these communities, and it's improving the communities that will solve the problem to a great extent. But, you know, when you look at things like Breonna Taylor, is that her name, in Louisville, that is an example of not following the Constitution. I mean, that search and seizure is totally unreasonable. The Constitution says that there won't be unreasonable searches and seizures, and yet to break into someone's home in the middle of the night that has no criminal record and on the basis that an ex-boyfriend has dealt drugs is so nonsensical and such a violation of the Constitution that the cop himself is not as guilty of misbehavior as the system that allows him to get a warrant to break into someone's home like that. So a lot of the times we're looking at the symptom of nonsensical laws. And
yeah, but how would you tackle police brutality in America that is real?
Well, I think that you have to be very tough on police and cops if they misbehave. I mean, I can give you personal experiences. I was the other night, I couldn't figure out which way all this construction traffic was supposed to move, and I slowed down to try to figure out where I was going, and when the cop saw that I was hesitating to go a certain direction, he came up and it was very mouthy. I've had situations where I'd be pulled over and detained because some dog thought there was something in the car. I mean, I think we've all had encounters with police that are where they're rude and they're obnoxious and they're so forth. That needs to stop. But and when you look at the big picture of defunding police or that type of thing, you're getting too carried away because you're not going to make things better. You're going to make things worse. So there are bad cops, and there are many of them that are very pompous and so forth because they have a badge on. But that doesn't mean you can defund the police department.
Talking with former Kohl executive Don Blankenship, running for president under the Constitution Party. We're learning about his platform, his stances, taking your questions for a third party candidate at 800-642-1234. Don, there are millions of frontline workers who are putting their personal health on the line each day in this pandemic. They are leaning on their employers for personal protective equipment to keep them safe. How would you approach workplace safety standards as president?
Well, I'm very close to that situation because I have a daughter that works at Mayo Clinic in Jacksonville, Florida. So I'm aware of the uneasiness of family members who have, family on the front line, so to speak, of the coronavirus and other issues. But I think it was ridiculous that we, for example, didn't have the equipment that we needed available to protect people, and they were wearing garbage cans or garbage bags to protect themselves instead of the right clothing in the early days of the virus. I think it's just another example of how inept the government is, that we're not more prepared for that type of situation, whether it be the mask or whatever. And simply put, we just got to be better prepared and do a better job of managing the government and listen more to the experts and the healthcare people themselves.
You went to prison for conspiring to violate federal mine safety standards. How would you approach labor issues as president?
Well, I actually went to prison because my politics were contrary to what the establishment's was. The government came in, changed the airflow, cut it in half on their own. I hadn't been at that mine in 12 years, and when it blew up, I did a documentary that explained what the government had actually done to cause the mine to blow up. So they charged me with a bunch of felonies and so forth. They couldn't convict me even 40 miles from the mine with a jury that
should executives be found criminally responsible for safety violations?
Yes and no. It depends on whether they are responsible for those safety violations. But
would you support the work of OSHA?
I support the work of OSHA and MSHA conceptually, but I can tell you that in the case of MSHA, which is the Mine Safety and Health Administration, the equivalent of OSHA in the mining industry, they are very political, and they try to pick winners and losers, and they're way behind technologically, and they don't train their people very well to do inspections, and they try to run the mines instead of regulate the mines. So it's not unlike, you know, you're concerned about police brutality and the behavior of policemen. You have that same problem existing in a lot of these regulatory agencies, particularly in the Mine Safety and Health Administration.
Very quickly here, what would your approach be to the coal industry in America as president?
Well, I think, first of all, that we destroyed the coal industry in the United States under the guise or the misconception that we were going to lower the temperature of the earth. But the United States and China both were producing and using about 1 billion tons of coal in 1980, and China now produces and uses about 4 billion tons, up 3 billion tons. And we cut U.S. Production by 300 or 400 million. So we actually polluted the world with the policies that drove industries and coal use and so forth out of the United States and drove the use of it to China to produce products that we then import. And the Chinese factories and the Chinese power plants have little or no environmental control compared to the United States. So,
Don, we're out of time. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
That's former coal executive Don Blankenship running for president under the Constitution Party. This is the Ideas Network.